Well, how many of you have ever received a thank you note? Really? There's a few of you that have not received a thank you note. I'm so sorry. It's going to be a rough moment for you right now. So, if you want to leave your address, I'll write you a thank you note. When I was a young dad, still feel somewhat young, although I'm feeling older every year, used to get these notes from my kids that were horribly misspelled. And the grammar police that's in me, actually, I really don't have any. It's my wife who is, she's way better at grammar than I am. But I would look at that and my heart would just be endeared even more because I know it was an effort to write those thank you notes or, you know, the Father's Day cards or things like that. Or maybe you've received a thank you note and sometimes they're kind of a token note, like you give a gift at a wedding and maybe sometimes I write a thank you note back and you're kind of like, well, they didn't have to do that, but they wanted to and it took thought and effort to do that. And how many of you, you don't receive much handwritten mail anymore, do you? So it takes an effort to write a handwritten note. It takes energy to do that. And that actually conveys something maybe a little bit more than just an email or just a quick note that someone typed out and sent to you or and things like that. But thank you notes can really mean something. How many of you watch Jimmy Fallon? Thank you notes. Really? Okay, do yourself a favor this next Friday, if you've never done that, and watch Thank You Notes, because I think they're one of the best sketches that he does, and it's really funny. So there's something about thank you notes that have a power to them, and it has something that kind of wells up when you have expressed something, you've experienced something, and you want to express this gratitude back to someone. And we've been in this series called Realign, looking at some of these attitudes or some habits that sometimes will get askew from us and kind of the life that God longs for us to have. And maybe you're here and you're kind of just checking out church and you're checking out the spiritual thing of following Jesus. And so your spiritual journey is kind of lower in your priority level type thing, but maybe you're investigated enough that you're here. And I think it's awesome that you're here. And I hope tonight it kind of stirs something in you to keep pursuing and investigating this guy, Jesus, because there's something about what the Bible has to say about gratitude that helps us live life with God. And it actually fuels our faith. And often in our culture, would you say it's easy to be thankful? Or do you think in our culture it's more difficult to be thankful? That, don't you think about in our culture, in a lot of ways, we live in a culture that is constantly consuming, right? I mean, even when we finish something, we always think of number next. We always think of the next thing that we need. And so even within ourselves, it's hard to be thankful sometimes. In fact, let me ask you this real simple question. In 10 seconds, in your own mind, name 5 things you're grateful for. Now, you probably got 1 or 2, but when you started getting to 3, 4, and 5, it maybe was a little more difficult. But all throughout this series, we've been looking at some of these attitudes and some of these habits that sometimes need a hip check, if we're talking hockey language, a little bit with us. And I think gratitude is one of those things that we see on constant display throughout the scriptures. In fact, there's lots of passages we could go to, and I want to look at 2 of them tonight. I'm often asked a real simple question, Jack, what is God's will for my life? How many of you think that's a complex question to ask somebody? So I get asked that question a lot, and it's always like, wow, okay, my eyes are blue. That's an easy question to answer. But, okay, what is God's will for your life? Well, here's what I do know. I know that the God of the Scriptures, the God I follow, is incredibly dialed into your life. He is not aloof. He's not distant. And so he is very dialed into who you are. In fact, the Scriptures say he knows the number of hairs on your head. Now, for some of you, that's easier to count than others. But he knows that. He's dialed into you. He's not distant or aloof or kind of distracted. So I firmly believe, and I believe the scriptures kind of point to this reality, that God is dialed in and he does have a will for your life. Now, I don't know what college you should go. I don't know what career path you should choose. I don't know what relationship you should go after. I don't know what job you should take. I don't know exactly what house you should rent or buy or purchase. But here's what I do know. In a couple of different places in the scripture, in fact, I think it's six of them to be specific, there are six places where it says, this is God's will for your life. And I want to look at one of those because it looks at this idea of gratitude. So if you have your Bible, and again, if you want to follow along on YouVersion, this is 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. It's toward the tail end of the New Testament, so go way to the right, come back a few pages. 1 and 2 Thessalonians, Paul's writing this letter, and he says these words through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. He says this, rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in your best circumstances. Is that what it says? Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks when everything goes right. Is that what it says? No. See, it's easy to be thankful and to be grateful when everything's going right, correct? But when things are a struggle, things are difficult, things aren't the way you had planned them or the way that you kind of dreamed them to be, it's a little bit more of a challenge. And sometimes in our culture, that's always consuming, and we're always pursuing this consumption, it's easy for gratitude to become kind of downshifted in our lives because we always see the obstacles or we see the struggles, we see the hurdles we have to get over. But here's what Paul's saying. Hey, you rejoice always. You pray continually. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you. See, as a follower of Jesus, God has some things to say about your life. And I think what he's pointing out here through the Apostle Paul is that gratitude, this attitude of gratitude, is to be a foundational baseline for your life. Now, listen, that doesn't mean you can never have a bad day. That doesn't mean that life can't stink in moments, right? That doesn't mean that you can't battle some feelings of frustration. That doesn't mean you have to put on a happy face and a fake smile, does it? That's not what Paul's saying. What he's saying here is you give thanks continually. You make this gratitude a baseline for your life. In fact, gratitude is an attitude you need to have because not only is what it's what God is calling us to, it's actually for your good when you live that way. How many of you know people that are thankful and grateful people? How many of you admire them? Now, that doesn't mean they don't struggle, and it doesn't mean they don't have hardship, but there's something about the way they live that begins to challenge us and to call us to something greater, and I think that's what Paul's getting at here, is that gratitude is something God desires for us, and this attitude of gratitude is actually good for me. And that doesn't mean I can't struggle. What it does mean is this, that we stay anchored to Christ's promises and his presence over our circumstances and our situation. Too often, we put the anchor on our circumstances and our situation. And when things go really, really well, it's easy to be grateful. But when it struggles, it's more of a challenge to be grateful. And this gratitude can really begin to slide in our life. And we become grumblers. We become complainers. We become people who are always longing for something more. And it doesn't mean that you can't have dreams and aspirations and desire more. But what do you see when you look back through the Old Testament? Remember the people of God as they're being led out of Egypt and they're wandering around in the desert? What happened to their attitude? At first, they were incredibly grateful. God rescued them out of slavery, right? Brings them out, rescues them in divine, incredibly powerful ways. And then suddenly, there's this shift because things got hard and things weren't as easy and the movie didn't play out the way they thought it would. And suddenly they're in the desert and it's a struggle and it's tough. And what do they start doing? Grumbling, complaining, right? In fact, you see this attitude struggle. And I think you see this a lot throughout the scriptures. And here's what I know about you. And here's what I know about me. I see that a lot in my life. I don't know if it's true for you. My hunch is that you could probably see it at play in your life. See, more gratitude is not generated by more acquisitions. You don't get more gratitude just by simply getting more things. Rather, it's more being aware of God's presence and his goodness. The misconception in our world is if I just get more stuff or better stuff, then I'll be more grateful. And that's true for a little while, right? How many of you have ever experienced buyer's remorse? See, we know this is a misconception because you've been at a store where you've purchased something, right? Guys, you tried on an outfit. I was just trying to think of different roles. Okay, so trying to identify. Ladies, you tried on a different outfit. Guys, you bought a chainsaw. I don't know but why you do that here, but you did. And, like, you got it at the store, and it looked awesome. You felt all lumberjacky. And then you get home, and it breaks, right? And what do you think? This is stupid. Why did I buy a chainsaw in Arizona? I'm not sure. But maybe whatever the illustration is, here's the truth. You've had buyer's remorse where you've purchased something. You thought it was going to be the end all. You actually gave you a little bit of a buzz even buying it. And you get home and it doesn't work quite right. All those as seen on TV type stuff. George Foreman grill, anyone? Okay. It's not as good as it looks on TV, is it? I've tried one. They're eh. But on TV, it looks like it would be amazing. I can fix a 5-course meal with this thing. But here's what we know. We know not everything pans out that way. So it's not this idea of just getting more acquisitions is going to give me more gratitude in life. It's when I choose to rather say, I want to have this awareness to God's presence and to his promises. And as I open up the scope of my mind and my mindset and how I view the world, I begin to see something that's really different, and it begins to anchor me. See, more gratitude is not necessarily generated by acquiring more stuff. There's a wonderful Christian writer named Robert Roberts, which is, I don't know why his parents named him that, but once he said that what's uniquely about the Christian faith is this idea and this concept of gratitude. Because gratitude often in our world can be based on things, based on stuff, based on promotions, based on acquisitions, based on things you achieve. But the truth is that it's very short living and it's fading fast. But when gratitude really is about recognizing the goodness of what we have. And one of the benefits of the Christian faith is realizing that God is not distant. He is not aloof. He's not distracted. He's actually dialed into my life, and he's actually giving a lot of good, that we serve a good God, even when things are difficult, and even when things are challenging, and even when things don't pan out the way that you anticipated, the way that you dreamed. See, gratitude is a byproduct of the way that you see things, or a certain worldview, if you will. In fact, in order for something to be good and goodness to be experienced in a lot of ways, you've got to have three things. You've got to have a benefit. That's the good that happens. You've got to have a benefit. You've got to have a benefactor, someone who produced that good, who provided that good. And you've got to have a beneficiary, someone who received that good. And when you look through the scriptures and you begin to see this idea of God being active in this life, here's my question to you now. Quick, think of 5 things. You're grateful for. Now, but think of it this way. Think back through your life and the way that God has provided and been active in your life. Even if you're not a follower of Jesus yet, my hunch is you can look back over your life and see how God's goodness has even been active in your life. When maybe you didn't give him any credit. You don't even look in his direction. But if you're honest with yourself, you could probably look back and say, you know what? I have had some good in my life. I've been the beneficiary of someone that gave some good, that gave a benefit into my life. So quick, think of 5 things that you're grateful for. Take 10 seconds. This week, I got a thank you note out, and I took 10 minutes. Here's my invitation to you. Get a thank you note out. Take 10 minutes. And if we are to pray continually and give thanks in all circumstances, what does that look like? To just take 10 minutes out of your life this week and say, God, I just want to write you a thank you note. I've been the beneficiary of some incredible things. And often in our life, in this culture of consumption, I always want to move on to number next. And this idea of gratitude needs to be grounded more and more in who I am and how I see the world and what my vantage point of the world is. And so I just took 10 minutes and I looked at just God's provision and his grace. Man, I needed that. There was no hope for this jerk of a guy to earn his way to God. There's no hope for that. But God in Jesus gave his grace to me. That's huge. It's a game changer. It's a life changer. So one, that's one. God's constant character. Aren't you amazed at how God doesn't move out of character? Anyone have a bad day before? Anyone been a jerk when you've had a bad day before? I'm so glad God's not a jerk. When that he doesn't have bad days like that. He's not like you. He's not like me. He's not reactionary. In this notion of when things can get tense, he doesn't react like we react, like I react. God, I'm just so thankful for your constant character, for your faithfulness. I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for these trips I've gotten to take around the world that's changed my viewpoint and how I see things. I'm thankful for the U.S. soccer team, even though they tied. I'm thankful for them. In the last second, still thankful for them. You know, I'm thankful for the opportunities that we have as a church to make a difference in our community. That to realize we meet in a public high school. The principal, Rex, former principal, was going to be here tonight, and he'll be here in a couple weeks. He wanted to say thank you to you who provided the chairs for Catalina High School. And so he'll be here in a couple weeks to do that. But to mere fact that Brian and I have talked about this, that, you know, we tried for months to find a place. And then we found this place and tried, and the door was shut. And we tried again, and the door was shut harder. And then, like, in a matter of a couple months, God just threw the doors open. And that here we are meeting in a public high school, doing baptisms in a public high school parking lot. And we have great favor here, not because of Jack or not because of Brian, but because of God and his faithfulness. That you just take the next step and God's faithful in that. And so what you begin to see is gratitude needs to be grounded deeply into our lives, into who we are, and that we begin to live. And so here's the invitation. I want to encourage you to take 10 minutes and say, God, would you help me expand my worldview? And instead of just moving on to number next and the next craving that I have to consume, would you just help me to pause and to be grateful for what you've done? See, this is what James 1:17 says this, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. His character is constant. The way he interacts is good. That God is a giver at his very core of who he is and what he's like. His grace goes beyond our expectations and beyond our explanation. His grace is so good. In fact, I want to look, the second scripture passage I want to look at is, I want to look at a story that, I love this story. And it's the story of this encounter that Jesus has in Luke 17. With some guys who are kind of calling out for some help. Anyone ever been in a position where you just needed some help, right? And so these guys are calling out to Jesus. And in Luke 17, here's what we begin to read. Jesus is traveling, right? He's traveling through kind of Samaria and Jerusalem area, this region in between. And if you don't know much about the region at the time, is they had great racial tensions between the Jewish people and the Samaritan people, who were seen as half-breeds, so to speak. And they were kind of this distant. There's a lot of relational tension, a lot of racial tension, a lot of tension, period, in these landscapes. And you begin to see this Gospel of Luke as he's writing this story. Here's what you have to understand about the Gospel of Luke. There's really two phases to the Gospel. The first part is all about this idea of the life and ministry of Jesus around Galilee, right? Where his ministry was taking place and his teachings there and his miracles and the healings there and all that kind of stuff. And then it's the last part and kind of the middle to the end is just following Jesus on the way to Jerusalem, to his death and to his crucifixion and to even better, to his resurrection. And so the Gospel of Luke is kind of broken up in two, and it's in these journey stories that we see of Jesus moving his way and making his way to Jerusalem that we begin to understand that the biggest goal of Luke and the whole Gospel is to open up the reality that this Jesus news is good news for all people. That the Christian faith and story is not an exclusive one, it's an inclusive one. That anybody can be a part of it if you're willing to surrender to Jesus. That's the point of this. And so Luke is writing this gospel story, and he's saying, I want you to understand, I want you to see something. And in this one encounter, we begin to understand a little bit more of this theme of gratitude that we see all over the Bible. But I want us to see it through the lens of this encounter of what we see. And so here's what begins to take place. You can read with me here in Luke 17, starting in verse 11. It says this, "Now on his way to Jerusalem," remember Luke's building this case, Jesus is on his way, "Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance." Listen, that's your first clue. Why are they standing at a distance? If you're new to the Bible, here's what you have to understand. In the first century, people that had leprosy, and that word leprosy in Greek literally means skin disease, right? Any kind of different skin disease that might be. They had to be at a distance. They had to be outside of the city. You couldn't be inside the city because everything was contagious, and they didn't want you to pollute the whole city. And so you therefore had to move outside of the city. You had to live out there. You had to live among a leper colony, among other people who suffered from these skin diseases, and that's who you could relate to. So here you have 10 guys lined up. They see Jesus. They've heard stories of Jesus. They call out to him, "Master, have mercy, have pity on us." Jesus, "Master, have pity on us." Now think about it. You're living in a leper colony. That's your life. Just put yourself there. Is that rough? Probably, huh? Probably pretty lonely. Probably pretty cutthroat in the sense that everybody's vying for very few limited resources, probably. There's not a whole lot of contact from other people. You've lost contact with family if you were connected to family before you got this disease. And you're out there, and maybe you get a note here and there. Maybe you get a talking over the wall that you get to communicate a little bit, but it's rough. And you've heard stories of how Jesus has healed people like you, right? But you stand with these 10 guys and you're yelling out, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." What's your thought process going through your mind? You ever stop to think about this? Are you yelling with great anticipation that someone's going to come to your rescue? Or are you just yelling because you're on your last hope? And you've been ignored most of your life existence while you've had this disease, and you're just trying anything you can get, right? So you may not have a lot of anticipation toward healing. And what you want is the story where Jesus actually touched the leper. Remember that one? In Mark, he writes about early on, Jesus has this encounter with a leper, and he touches him. What that must have been like when Jesus' hand was on his shoulder, because when's the last time he was touched? And that's what you're hoping for, and you're standing at a distance, and you're yelling, and Jesus doesn't walk towards you. Like, the story doesn't play out. Like that one story that you heard, the rumor that you heard as it got passed along. But Jesus simply yells back, "Hey, go show yourself to the priest." What? Jesus. Man. And in that moment, they have this decision to make. Do we do what Jesus said? Or we just say, "Hey, you know, gave it a shot, didn't work"? What would you do? See, in that culture, the one who could declare you clean was the priest. And they could declare you as clean, as healed, and you could go back into culture, back into society, back into societal life, right? And so in that moment, these 10 guys who stand at a distance and yell, "Jesus, have mercy and have pity on us." And Jesus' response, "Go show yourself to the priest." And in that moment, they have a decision to make. And all 10 of them, probably maybe 5 of them felt real good about it. The other 5 were like, "I don't know, this doesn't seem to be going the way we were hoping it was going to go." But they talked them into it, right? So all 10 turn around and start walking toward the priest. And here's what we begin to see in the story. When he saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priest." And as they went, they were cleansed. As they went, as they took Jesus at his word, and they said, "Okay, the best we know how, we're just going to step out and follow the words of Jesus. I may not know everything. I may have a lot of confusion. I may not have full understanding here. And I may not even like the fact that I have to go take a walk, and I'm not even healed yet. But the best I know how, I'm just going to take a chance. And so they take this chance. They walk in. As they went, all 10 are healed. Think about that. For days, months, weeks, years, you've been out there waiting for what has just occurred to you, what has just unfolded and happened for you. And in that moment, what do you do? In that moment, what do? You have something to be so grateful for, right? God's goodness is displayed to you. You're the beneficiary of it. Do you know the rest of the story? What's interesting is what happens. How many got healed? All 10 get healed, right? Next verse. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back. Praising God in a loud voice, he threw himself at Jesus' feet and he thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. He was a foreigner, is the word there. In Greek, it's allegenes. He was an outsider who came back to Jesus. And Jesus' response. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Now, I went to Marana High School. I'm not that great at math. But here's what I know. If you got 10 and you got 1 that comes back, what percentage is that? For those of you who aren't playing along, 10%. 10%. So what's left who didn't come back? 90%. You are very good at math. Well done. 10% return ratio on a miraculous healing. On someone who's benefited from the goodness of who God is. His grace exceeds explanation and exceeds expectation. And he meets all 10 of them. What's fascinating about the story is the gratitude only seemed to reside in 10%. I tend to think I'm a pretty grateful guy. I tend to think that I'm really grateful for what God does in my life. I tend to think that I get this lesson. Okay, preacher dude, I understand what you're saying. And I tend to think I live this way. But listen, if I'm just honest, as I'm filling out my thank you note this week, when's the last time I just stopped and just really, out of the gratefulness of my heart, just thank God for what he's given me and the opportunities and the family and the people and the places and the things? I tend to think I'm really grateful. But if you're at all like me, here's what I began to understand. I live in a culture of consumption. And I think I need realignment more than I realize. Friends, I think I'm always moving on to number next. As soon as something happens, and I may whisper a thank you to God, but do I pause long enough to actually worship in that moment? Do I pause long enough? And is that a length of time, Jack? I don't know what it is for you. Is it 30 seconds? Is it 30 minutes? Is it 30 hours? How long do I have to be thankful? I don't know. Here's my question to you. You have a 10% and a 90%. Where do you typically tend to fall? That's challenging. I know it was for me this week. Kind of looking at this notion of saying, hey, God, your love really does reach beyond. I think that's one of the things we see is God is not stingy with his grace and his concern with us. In fact, he's constantly dialed into us. He delights in meeting our needs and exceeding our expectations with his grace and his love and his hope and his concern and his care. His love reaches beyond even those who feel like they're too far broken. And maybe that's you sitting here tonight. Like, you don't know my story, preacher guy. You don't know my story. And how bad I've messed up and how bad I've hurt people. God certainly isn't going to do good for me. And here's what I would say is, I think he does. And but I think he actually enjoys it. I think God loves to be a giver. And does that mean he's going to make you a millionaire? Probably not, but if he does, call me. But I think God just loves to give, and he loves to bless his kids. The same way as a dad, I just love to surprise my kids sometimes. I love it. I get juiced by it. I'm excited about it because I think my heart is beginning to change to be hopefully more reflective of that. Something transpired for these 10. They all got healed. And one of them, the 10%, said, I can't just keep moving forward. I have to pause and I have to go back and say thanks. See, God's love is always reaching beyond. And God desires for our love to reach back to him. It's about a relational correspondence with Jesus. It is not about religious compliance with Jesus. Do you hear me? God is more concerned with having a relational connection with you than just your religious compliance about things. That's why it's every scripture passage we look at, it's always about your heart, not just actions. People can fake actions, right? It's about a heart condition. Some people in those 10 could have written a thank you note to Jesus. Maybe they did. Send it by carrier pigeon. I don't know. But here's what I do know. One couldn't move forward without first reaching back and coming back to worship Jesus. And he was a foreigner. What's fascinating about that word, when you begin to think about it in Greek, again, it's a legonis. And what's imprinted in the Temple Mount is that Greek word. What it separated was the section where the Jews could go in and then the temple courts of the Gentiles. And literally what it would say in Greek is no foreigner beyond this point. They could not go any further into the Temple Mount. But here, we have a foreigner coming back to the Lord of the temple and standing and sitting and kneeling at his very feet. No distance. Proximity right here. I think that's what delighted Jesus' heart. What is Luke trying to write a gospel about? That this Jesus news is good news for all people. That there isn't this separation anymore. This is about God's grace being good enough for you and good enough for me and good enough for you and good enough for the person behind you and good enough for the person three seats down from you. It's good news for all people. And that we have an opportunity to begin to live as people who are grateful of a good news people who say, I want to live with this attitude of gratitude. I want to live with this relational connection. Here's what we begin to find is Jesus has this encounter with him. He comes back. He kneels at his feet. We're not all 10 healed. Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise, he goes on, except this foreigner. Then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. Your faith has sozoed you. Now, he got healed before. He got saved in this moment. Your faith has sozoed you. It's you have been made completely well now. You got a miracle and got physically healed in a moment a while ago. But in this moment, you are made completely well. You are now relationally right with God. Not because of something you did, not because you're in the 10%, but because of something I've did, you've come back and you've discovered relationally. There's been this relational connection, not just religious compliance. The spiritual life Jesus invites us to is not a purely factual or intellectual endeavor. It is about our heart and this ongoing, growing relational connection with your Creator. If it's only about the rules for you, then you are missing the whole point of faith in Jesus. He wants to have a relationship with you. That's just how you be compliant. The return of this gratitude got this leper something more than the other 9 got. They missed out on that. He reveals that this, you've been saved completely. I love this quote from A.W. Tozer. It says this, gratitude is an offering precious in the sight of God, and it is one that the poorest of us can make and be richer for having made it. That anybody can live practicing gratitude, realigning their heart to be grateful. God's love is always reaching beyond, but God desires our love to reach back and to connect with him. And I want to keep that one picture, in, or that one leper and his healing in mind. So we got the 10%, and what was the other number? 90%, right? And the question is, which camp do you tend to fall in as you just go throughout the normalcy of your life? Do you tend to fall in the 10% where you're actually pausing long enough to think about God and to be grateful for what you have? Or are you moving on to number next so fast? And here's a couple different pictures I want to give you. One is this. How many of you drove here tonight? Okay. Anyone take horseback? Just checking. Okay. Be cool if you did. How many of you looked out your windshield driving here? Okay. How many of you would, that's a good thing, by the way. I highly recommend that. How many of you looked in your rearview mirror on the way here? Here's my hunch that, and I won't blind you, although, see if I can get you, Daniel. Okay, gotcha, okay. Here's my hunch. We probably spend 90% of our time driving looking out the windshield, right? We probably spend about 10% of our time looking in the rearview mirror. And I wonder if maybe one of the lessons we get from this story is this idea of saying, God, would you just help me to live with a little bit more attention and awareness to the rearview mirror of life? That I could see, I wrote on my mirror, this sits above my desk, I wrote God's mercy. You can write God's activity, you can God's grace, God's provision, whatever you want to put in there. But I just want you to think that maybe the next time you're driving, here's what my love would be, is that a month from now, when you see your rearview mirror, that you go, am I being grateful? Am I being grateful? Am I looking back on my life a little bit and seeing things and being intentional about pausing and just telling God, just worshiping? Because that's what this leper did, is instead of moving on to number next, he came back and he paused. He did a second thing I want to point out. This second thing is just, I'm going to call it gratitude rhythm, okay? And you have to kind of travel with me a little bit on this, because at first you're going to hear what I'm going to say next. You're going to go, that's weird. Why are we talking about this? So remember when you were a little kid in elementary school and the firemen came? We have a few firemen here. We have firemen came and they did like the show and tell stuff, and they had the fire trucks out there. And maybe at some point they would tell you a very simple thing. They would say, hey, if you ever catch on fire, you should stop, drop, and roll, right? Dude, you've been talking about gratitude. Why are we talking about people on fire? That's not nice. Okay, I get it. But the rhythm of what helps you then, I think, can help us develop an attitude of gratitude and have that kind of activated in our life more and more. That if we live with people who begin to choose deliberately and intentionally to look in the rearview mirror a little bit of our life and say, God, I just want to recognize your mercy and your grace and your love and your activity in my life. And I want to pause and be grateful for that. And what happened is that there was a fire lit in this guy when he got healed. And he could not move on to number next until he first came back and just let Jesus know, I am so grateful that you responded to my call. Because you didn't have to. You're on your way somewhere. I'm just a nuisance on the side of the road yelling. But see, Jesus never sees us as a nuisance. He hears our voice, whoever we're yelling above and over. He's dialed into your life. And this guy was so grateful that this fire of gratitude lit up in him. And he came back and he just did what we just talked about. He stopped, he dropped, and he rolled. He stopped moving forward so fast in life. This culture of consumption, he just hit pause. He came back and he dropped in this attitude of humility. God, the world is so much bigger than me. And I can control so very little. In fact, I don't hardly have any kind of control. And you have been so good to me. I just want to pause in humility and recognize who you are and what you've done for me. And he just let praise and gratitude roll off his lips. God, I'm so thankful for you. I'm so thankful for what you've done in my life. I want to live with this attitude of gratitude. Again, this bottom line is simply this: gratitude is fuel for an active and growing faith with Jesus. gratitude is this active faith. It's this fuel that begins to fuel this thing. This idea that we can live and say, I want to stop often. I want to drop in an attitude of humility. See, gratitude grows best within a posture of humility. I wrote these words. The bigger our sense of entitlement, the smaller our sense of gratitude. I believe we live in a culture, myself included, where we might be one of the most entitled generations ever, feeling like we're entitled to things. And I say that for my generation. I think we feel entitled to a lot of different things. And the bigger you get feeling entitled, the more difficult it will be for you to sense and feel and harness and grow and nurture gratitude. And so allow God to build this gratitude in you. So stay humble and let gratitude grow. And here's my invitation to you this week. Real simple. Take 10 minutes. Grab a thank you note from your house or a piece of paper. And read back over Luke 17. And literally in 10 minutes you can do this. Just pause. Do what we see this guy doing in the story. Stop, drop, and roll. Stop moving on to the next consumption thing, to the next number, next assignment, the next agenda item that you have, and just hit pause and say, God, I just want to, in humility, I just want to recognize your involvement and your activity in my life. And then let that roll. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for the way that you provided for me in college, the way that you were steering my life when I didn't even recognize it. And the way that you were preparing me and helping me meet with people that would help me down the road that I didn't even recognize in the moment. I'm grateful for that. I certainly could have missed that. I'm dumb enough to miss it. But I recognize it now, that you were lining that up. I'm thankful for my kids' health. You know, just a list of things. And take a moment and pause. Here's what I believe, church. I believe the church that is grounded in gratefulness has better joy, has a greater impact, and has a whole lot more fun building the kingdom of God in this world. And I want us to be a church that has fun. I want us to be a church that lives with joy. I want us to be a church that lives with this attitude of gratitude, that's just grateful for what God's done for us. Because here's what I believe. I believe gratefulness is contagious. I think people who live with grateful lives and grateful hearts and a grateful worldview and mindset of God's activity and dialed into them just happen to attract other people who aren't grateful. I believe the 10% really can impact the 90%. And I think that's what we see in this story, is that it's really easy to become part of the 90%, right? You just naturally drift there. In fact, in a culture of consumption, that's just the default, isn't it? So let me ask you again. Quick, think of 5 things that you're really thankful for, grateful for. Can you do it? Take 10 minutes this week and just pause. God, I want to be grateful for all the blessings that you've done in my life, relationally, professionally, just in the opportunities and the experiences that I've gotten to have. And literally, do a thank you note to God. I think it will change and begin to manufacture this mindset of the 10%, which is where life with God is a whole lot more fun than just defaulting to the 90% that just lives in this consumption circle. Do you see it? I think that's the beauty of the story of what we're seeing tonight and why the realignment of gratitude matters in our life. And so would you pray with me? Our band's going to come lead us in worship a little bit. And I just want to give you a little bit of space as they come. We're going to take communion. So if you're new here, this is what we do every week. And if you're a follower of Jesus, you're invited to do that. We have stations around the room, 2 in the back, 2 up front, that they're going to play some music and you're going to have an opportunity to take communion. And here's what I'd like for you to do for communion tonight. It's just as you take that at the table or if you take that back to your seat, is to literally pause. don't go through the motions of just taking communion and remembering this. Okay, this is Jesus' body that was broken for me and given for me. This is Jesus' blood that was shed on my behalf for the release of my guilt, of my shame, of my sin, of my brokenness. But to literally pause and just stare at it a little bit. And to remember, this actually cost Jesus something. It cost him everything. And that he was willing to do it for you. For me. See, the beginning of this whole story in Luke 17 is on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus has this encounter. Why is he going to Jerusalem? To give his life for you, for me. On his way, he has this experience. And even there, his grace exceeds expectation and explanation of people who are calling out to him. Has he done that for you? Has his grace met you and exceeded your expectation and your explanation that he's included you into his family and called you into his kingdom? And maybe you're here and you're just investigating this faith thing. Here's what I'd like to say to you is, man, there's room in this family for you. There's room in this God family for you. That even tonight, he may be touching you on the shoulder and saying, hey, give your life to Jesus. Just trust me. You come talk to me if that's you. 10%, 90%. Where are you at? What's your natural default? What's your drift? And so, Father, as we pause to take communion, as we worship you in these songs, I pray that in these next few moments, not only would we remember what you've done for us, not just done for us on the cross, but Father, would you stir our hearts? Quick, what are five things I'm grateful for? Would you help us to grow to become a people, to become a person, to become a community, in a church faith community that lives with an attitude of gratitude, knowing that gratitude is fuel for an active growing faith with you. God, I pray that for me. I want to be part of the 10%. I don't want to just default and drift to the 90. And I pray that for my friends here. Would you help us be a church that intentionally, deliberately chooses to go toward the 10%, to live with this gratitude, constantly being a foundation and a baseline for our lives? Would you help us to see the ways that you constantly are interacting with us, providing for us, intervening, letting us know that you love us, that you care about us, that you got us? And would you cause us to be people that pause quickly? So would you guide us in these moments? And as we sing, would we just sing with grateful hearts? Would you let our worship just ring in these rafters? Loud and strong, and bold, out of gratitude for you. We thank you.